This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 81.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host to the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, the man, the myth, it's Brandon Turner.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, Brandon? How are you?
I'm good. Hey, I got a serious question for you. Very serious.
Yeah? What's up?
Yeah. What is your favorite movie?
My favorite movie? Ooh, that's a tough one. Because it's fresh in my mind, I'm going to say Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, okay. That's a good movie.
But that's one of them. How about you?
That Thing You Do, Tom Hanks movie from...
Stop.
Yeah. I love that movie.
Is that really your favorite movie?
That is my
movie?
All-time favorite movie. I learned to play drums because of that
That
movie.
Actually says a lot about you. Okay.
You
it's all starting to make sense now, yep. Man. It's all starting to make sense.
I was destined to be a rock star. And somehow I ended up here.
I had faith in you, and it just keeps dropping. Awesome, man. Well, that is a good question. I'm glad you asked it.
Thanks. People might want to know, so that's why, you know.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Enough about us. Yeah. Let's get on to the interview.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, guys. So today we have a really, really great show. Today we actually have a follow-up from our show 77. Today's show is with Michael Quarles, and we wanted to have him back because we didn't quite have enough time to delve into all the topics that we wanted to delve into last time, and those topics are on the subject of marketing. And we'll get into that in a second. But before we do, let's get into today's
quick tip.
All right. Today's quick tip is Bigger Pockets File Place. If you are not aware, we have a place on the site called the Bigger Pockets File Place. You go to biggerpockets.com/files, F-I-L-E-S. And there you can find all sorts of files. You can find spreadsheets and forms and agreements. And ultimately, it's your peers sharing documents that they've put together to help them with their business, and they're putting it out there to share with you. So definitely check it out. You'll get lots of ideas. Definitely do not just go and use a contract. If somebody put a contract up there, we would absolutely recommend you run anything by your attorney before you ever use it. So just be careful on that stuff. But definitely be sure to take a look and see what's out there. There's a lot of great things.
Cool. All right. And yeah, by the way, if you're a regular free Bigger Pockets member, you can download 3 a week. If you're a plus, you can download 5 a week. And if you're a pro member, you can download as many as you want. And that is our pro benefit of the week. So check it out. Upgrade to pro, biggerpockets.com/pro, and you can get download unlimited files every single week. So with that, let's bring in Michael. You want to introduce him?
Yeah. So really quick, Michael is an active investor out of California. He specializes in wholesaling. He's done a ton of these wholesale deals. It's kind of a cool strategy. Again, we talked about it back in show 77, so definitely check that out. He's also the owner of yellowletters.com. It's this monster direct mail company, and he's definitely one of the brighter minds out there on the topic of marketing and direct mail, which is why we really wanted to have him back, because the last show we talked about negotiation and not direct mail. So here we are. We're back. We're on show 81, and we're going to talk to you guys about direct mail and marketing. And there's a ton of really, really great information in this one. I know I say it a lot, but you know, break out your pens and take notes on this one, because you're going to get a lot.
Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. Finding rental property insurance has been a headache for the past few years. You know the feeling. You're scrambling, calling 20 different insurance agencies in a dozen different cities, struggling to protect your portfolio at the right cost. But I'm going to tell you a little secret that'll change everything. Veteran investors don't go through the everyday insurance companies. They just use NREG. NREG, that's N-R-E-I-G, provides insurance solely for real estate investors. They've built the largest insurance program in the country for residential tenant-occupied, vacant, and renovation properties. The best part? You can put all your properties on one insurance schedule and one monthly bill. And you can add, change, or remove properties without having to cancel one policy and purchase another. They insure properties from single-family rentals up to 20-unit multifamily dwellings, vacation rentals, mobile homes, condos, and more. Trade catchy jingles for cash flow with insurance made for investors. Visit NREIG.com/BPPod to request a proposal. NREIG.com/BPPOD. Are you about to sell a property? Wait like 60 seconds because this could save you thousands. Our friends at 1031 Pros have saved their clients more than $500 million with a B in taxes with 1031 tax deferred exchanges. With the 1031 exchange, you can say goodbye to the huge capital gains taxes when selling and roll your property's profit into another investment that could make you even more. Whether you're an individual investor, part of a larger group, or a title or real estate agent, 1031 Pros is ready to help. Trust me, I've done 1031 exchanges on multiple properties before, and it has saved me tens of thousands in taxes, if not more. With over 30 years of experience, 1031 Pros has handled over 20,000 audit-free exchanges. And they specialize in all types of exchanges, delayed, simultaneous, reverse, and improvement exchanges in all 50 states. And right now, Bigger Pockets listeners can get $250 off any exchange by visiting my1031pros.com/BP. That's my1031pros.com/BP to get $250 off today. Oh, and make sure to mention Bigger Pockets when you call. They take care of our people over there.
So with that, let's bring him in. All right, Michael, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you again.
It is absolutely great to be here. If this is half as fun as the last one, I'm just going to go home after this and relax.
Yeah, the last show was a lot of fun. People really like that. Definitely one of our most popular shows we've done. And because of that, that is why you're back so soon. I mean, usually we wait a year between people, but last time we had like this list of what, like 50 questions that I wanted to ask you. Like, yep. I kind of wrote up this list and got to the end of our interview and we had done like six questions. And so we definitely want to explore more of those topics today, especially on the topic of marketing. And that's why we're bringing you back so soon.
We're about a month out and we've had well over 30,000 folks listen to your show, which is...
Is that good or bad?
That's good. That's 30,000 listeners is slightly above our average, but it's popular show.
Yeah. So why don't we just, start with a recap? Because not everyone would have listened to the last show. So those people who haven't.
And that was, by the way, that was show 77 of the Bigger Pockets podcast. And you could find that at biggerpockets.com/show77.
Yeah. So definitely listen to that after you're done with this one, if you haven't listened to that one yet. But those people who haven't heard that, why don't you give us like a 2-minute recap of like, how did you get started and what kind of investing do you do?
I got started in real estate. Gosh, that's a long story for 2 minutes. You know, buying that piece of dirt and writing that bad check and doing what I didn't know I couldn't do, and which is why I could do it, because I didn't know I couldn't do it.
What are you talking about, man?
What's the recap of the last show?
That's the most cryptic thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, but now it's going to make everyone want to go listen to that show.
Yeah, it's true.
So, it was absolutely not the way to start. And I think we spoke about that for, what, an hour and a half? But at the same time, it's allowed me to invest in houses, and I flip houses. I don't rehab them. So I think, Josh, you coined the word on the show, hoteling. So I guess that would fit probably my marketing and my investment strategy of what I do with these properties. I'm not a passive income earner. I'm a massive income earner. And
that's a tweetable topic right there. That's funny.
Well, my ADD gets in the way for passive income. So I enjoy buying houses and selling them for the as-is value without doing anything with them. So, and I buy them at 60 to 50% off value and turn around and sell them at 100% of the value that they're at.
That's cool.
Gotcha.
That's cool. Well, cool. Right. So we talked about that a lot last time, which is a fascinating model. But the whole idea behind, I mean, wholetailing, as they call it, the idea predicates you have to have a good deal. I mean, like, you have to, because I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to go out and fix up a house, you can force, you can buy a halfway decent deal and put your own labor into it and fix it up and make a little bit of money off of flipping. But if you're going to sell it without fixing it, that's a lot more tough.
I don't see it as more tough, actually. I don't have to learn how to paint, and I don't have to learn how to put carpet in or tile in or where stuff is at Home Depot.
Yep.
I don't have to be there at 6:30 every morning, and I don't have to worry about if I have figured out my costs correctly, because I'm not doing any of those items. And I don't know if you two have ever spent hours upon hours in Home Depot looking for a bolt or a screw or a paintbrush type or what have you. Josh, that is outstanding cool.
I was just trying to
mimic
you there.
He just put his sunglasses on, his Ray-Bans. Wow. He did look like Vanilla Ice there for a second.
I've got this horrible glare outside my window, and I'm trying to decide if that's the way to do it. So
it's either Ray Charles or Vanilla Ice.
Home Depot, yes. I've spent many
absolutely
an hour looking for
it's no fun. It's no fun.
So when I look at the opportunity to have an opportunity, I always look at it, how do you get there? I mean, the phone doesn't ring by accident. It's not like they're wrong phone calls, you know. Someone doesn't ring trying to call their aunt, and then all of a sudden they get you by mistake and have a house to sell. So we do all these things on purpose when we have that end goal in mind. And the prospect for a wholesale deal or a flip deal or a rehab deal or a hotel deal, they look the same. They all have to have an equity base.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get to that, right? They all have to have an equity base. So in order to get an equity base, we've got to find a deal that's a quote distressed deal. And, you know, as you were saying, we've got to get the phone to ring. So how on earth do we get the phone to ring? And that's really the subject that we wanted to cover today with you. So I know that you're probably one of the folks that people on Bigger Pockets and probably elsewhere look up to as one of the, one of the better marketers out there. So let's get into the topic of marketing. And I guess we'll start with kind of your bread and butter, at least what I believe to be your bread and butter, which is direct mail. So what is direct mail? Let's just start with that.
In today's marketplace, I think direct mail is probably the number one marketing item that you can use. So we're taking something, a piece of paper, we're writing something on that piece of paper, we're putting a stamp on it, an address on it, and sending it through the U.S. Postal Service to someone. And we're hoping that someone has a desire to sell their house. We don't know if they are. I mean, if we had a list of the motivated sellers, we'd send out like two pieces of mail because we wouldn't need to buy any more houses than that. So we send them out mail and then they call us back. And inside of sending out that mail, there are various types of mail and messages that create a response that we want to have created. In my market, I only want to talk to people that can actually sell me a house. So if I send a letter out to someone who's maybe upside down or has marginal equity, or just bought the house, even though it's free and clear, it doesn't make any sense to have them to call me, which is why I don't like, the bandit sign concept, because that's massive marketing or mass marketing, and you can't control who's calling you, where I can control who calls me with my direct mail, which is the beauty of direct mail, where if we looked at 07, 06, in that time period where a lot of sellers could call us and most everybody had an equity base, we didn't have to use as much direct mail. We could use some of the other things out there to get callers. You know, the year that I did 200 deals, I spent $600,000 marketing that year.
Whoa.
Well, it's all relative.
I guess. Amazing to think
so
about.
So we knew that we were going to make $52,000 per deal. That was our goal. Or 25%, whichever is greater. So at $204,000, it turned from $52,000 to more. Anything under $204,000, it turned from the 25% to the 52. So, you know, you take 200 times 52,000. What is that? In your marketing, it should start out somewhere between 8 to 12%, depending on what you're wanting to achieve and what your goals are. It could get up to 20 to 22%.
Hey, Michael, quick. So you're talking 8 to 10 or up to 22% of what?
Well, of your spend. So if I spend $1, I should get $8 or $12 back.
Got it.
And eventually, I know I'm going to get $20 to $22 back.
So you're saying for every dollar spent, specifically on marketing.
On marketing, right.
Okay.
On marketing. And marketing, it looks like a lot of different things.
Right.
I mean, most people don't realize we are marketing. I mean, we are media here. And a lot of people don't use themselves as a marketing tool, but it's one of the best marketing tools that are out there. I mean, it, you know, if someone asked me today, I have $500 and I want to get started in real estate investing, what do I do? Do I send out a postcard? Do I send out a yellow letter? Do I send out a zip letter? Do I get a bandit sign? What do I do? And my goal for them would be over the next 30 days, write down everybody that you know who lives in your market that can influence that market. So they have a house or they know someone that has a house. Write down their name, their phone number. If you have their email address or their physical address, great. When you get that list done, divide that list by 22 because we only want to work during normal work hours. A lot of investors think they have to work all the time and they don't. This is a business just like any other business and we have 22 days a month you should work. Take that list, divide it by 22. So now you have, if you have 220 people on your list, you have 10 people a day that know you, can actually say hello to you, that you can call on the phone and say, Josh, hi, this is Michael. Just want you to know, after a long and careful consideration, I've decided to be a real estate investor. And I knew that you would want to help me out. And so I wanted to let you know and send you a business card of mine. And, you know, I buy houses from this person and that person and those kinds of people. So if you come across anybody that you know that needs to have my service, can you give them my information? And if someone were to do that, and that's free, all you have to do is buy 1,000 business cards yep. or more. They would never need another marketing piece. They wouldn't need yellow letters. They wouldn't need bandit signs. They wouldn't need TV, radio, newspaper, anything else. The problem with that is I call that sweat marketing and network marketing. And when people do that, they also can't go on vacation because their business goes with them. But in the beginning, if you only have $500, I think everybody should start doing that. But, you know, they're embarrassed as well. If they can't tell mom and dad that they're going to do something else or wife that they can do they're going to do something else or their boss that they want to take on this other adventure or venture because maybe they sold Amway or life insurance or Tupperware or whatever it was and they failed at that. So they've kind of cried wolf. Well, get over it. Everybody has failures. I mean, let's say all of us raise our hand on failure.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you have failure, that means you just have to get back up again. You know, falling down is just right before you get back up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, I agree. I think that's a great technique. And I know when I was a real estate agent, I followed something similar. I literally put together a list of everybody I knew and just started calling, you know, started working the phones. And it was a great way to get clients. I think a lot of people, again, end up in that fear mindset or embarrassment or something else where they just say, hey, well, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe they're going to reject me. Well, you're going to get rejected a lot in real estate. So you better start learning. Yeah,
and rejections are actually not necessarily rejections. They're a step towards doing a deal. So isn't it just like another step in the process of getting a contract signed?
Oh, sure.
So I don't look at it as rejection as a negative thing. Say no to me. That is great. Because if you say no to me, that's one step closer to a yes. And by the way, I learned this lesson the hard way for anybody on the phone. You know, just because we preach it doesn't mean we always use it. And yeah. which is the hardest thing when you're trying to help someone. It reminds us to do it ourselves. And so my gardener, who was mowing the lawn on one of my houses, his real estate agent called me because I had a for sale sign on that lawn. And the real estate agent, now this guy's my gardener, called me and wanted to write an offer on my house for my gardener.
Nice.
And I paid my gardener's real estate agent $4,500 to sell my gardener my house because I didn't tell my gardener. All he had to do was come to me directly. And shame on me, but we think about that. How many times has that happened? How many times do we have a conversation with someone who says, yeah, I knew a guy, they sold a house last month to a real estate investor. Well, why didn't I talk to you last month? What was it about me that stopped me from doing that? That's just all about marketing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. I mean, I think that's a really good point. I don't want to like just move on, but I do have something that you said earlier.
And I love the gardener story. Yeah. I think that's fantastic. And it's true. You know, I think we have to remember to talk to everybody. Talk to everybody because you don't know who's investing and you don't know who that next sale is going to go to and the next deal is going to be with. So I love that.
Well, and I can definitely identify with what you were saying about the, you know, maybe you sold Amway in the past or maybe you did. I mean, I never sold Amway, but you know, like the idea of I'm a dreamer. Is that the right word? Like an entrepreneur, maybe whatever. I like business idea. So when I told my parents back when I was 21 that I was going to be a real estate investor, like they thought I was, you know, crazy or just, you know, grabbed a random get rich quick scheme book or late night TV thing. And you know what I mean? Like it was almost embarrassing, right? Like they just thought, oh, it's just Brandon, another one of his goofy ideas. So I can definitely identify with that quite a bit.
You know, and everybody has those. And I always tell people, when those naysayers or those people that you're afraid to tell, those are perfect people to tell. Because if I can talk to my parents and tell them I want to do something, then they're going to and want to laugh at me kind of thing. Or if I'm embarrassed to because I think they'll laugh at me. But if I can talk to them, tell them, and handle all of their objections, first, they love me, so they're never going to get mad at me. Secondly, but when I handle their objections, that tells me I'm one step closer to being able to handle the seller's objection. And so we need a bunch of those people. You have to role play a lot. When you market, when you send out anything, you put up a bandit sign or send out a yellow letter or a postcard or whatever you do, if you're not ready to receive the prospect's call or opportunity, don't do it. I mean, so you're standing in the grocery line and you're wearing an I Buy Houses t-shirt or shirt, and the guy or the gal in front of you or behind you say, hey, so you buy houses? If you don't know what to say when they ask you that, and if it's not a canned response, and it can't be canned like you're reading it on the back of a food item. You have to say, my name is Michael Quarles. I buy houses. I buy from these people, these people, these people, these people. I do all of these things for them. And if you don't close with those things and tell them the story, well, shame on you for marketing. Shame on you for wearing that shirt because that's why we're doing it.
You know, it's funny. I wrote a post about that exact thing the other day on the Bigger Pockets blog. It was called How to Write the Perfect Elevator Pitch in Under 10 Minutes. And yeah, whether or not like my strategy for writing a pitch is exactly what everyone should do, I mean, people come up with their own ways. But my point with the article was this, was that for like 5 years, that exactly was what happened to me. I mean, people would say, so what do you do? And I mean, this is what I would say. I'd be like, I invest in real estate. What do you do? I mean, that was my thing, right? Like, that was my pitch. That was how like I explained what I did in life. And like now when I look back, I'm like, man, I was so stupid. It only took me 10 minutes to sit down one time, come up with a list or come up with kind of a canned, sort of canned response. But again, not like, you know, I'm reading it, but come up with just an answer to that question that would help me out in my business and maybe help me raise money, help me find deals, whatever. So again, I'll put a link to that in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show81. And but yeah, definitely check that out if you want to know how to do your pitch. But to go back to something you said earlier too, you said somebody will come to you and say, I got $500. I want to get started with, you know, real estate investing. How do I get started? And you said, you know, make the list, which is awesome. So let me kind of rephrase that question. How much money do I need to get started with direct mail? We'll go back to the direct mail topic. How much do I need to get started? Will $500 do it? Will $500 a month do it? What do I need?
Before I can answer that, I have to know what someone's objective is. So if their objective is I'm going to buy and hold and I'm going to buy at 100% value and I'm going to finance all my purchases and I'm not looking to buy equity when I purchase, then that takes a limited amount of money.
Yep.
You can finance your marketing within buying the house because they allow real. I look at MLS and what realtors get paid. Some of what they get paid is for marketing. And so you can basically finance your marketing dollar. So in that case, you don't need much at all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yep.
But if you're going to do shorts or if you're going to do lease options or maybe marginal sub twos where you're not putting a lot of money out until you have to perform on the shorts situation, that takes less as well. And I always looked at it and said, told people, what do you want to make? How do you want to make it? So I want to make $5,000 per deal wholesaling. Okay, so how many of those do you want to do? Well, I want to do 17 of them. Okay, well, can you do 17 of those in what period of time? Well, I want to do the monthly. Okay, so you want to make $85,000 monthly doing 17 wholesale deals that you make $5,000 on. They say yes. I said, okay, keep in mind, it's a 1/10 multiplier. So yeah, if you're $85,000, multiply it by 10%, that's what you're going to have to spend. No, but what if I want to make $100,000 in equity that I can flip? Fantastic. You have to spend $10,000 in marketing to earn that $100,000. And that is the truest number there is, irrespective of if you're a marginal person, a flipper, or a wholesaler, or a wholetailer, you're going to spend 10% of your whatever you want to make in marketing. If gotcha. You don't, you could get lucky. There's, you know, a ton of people out there that, you know, they'll send out 300 postcards and they'll get a deal. But do you want to have a business that you can get lucky with and it's only sustained by how much luck you have? Or do you want a business that you can say, it's going to come in here every month It's going to be a membership business. Every month, someone's going to give me a membership due. We just call them houses memberships. But every month, that's the business I want. And so if I know I have to have an on-purpose, predictable business, then I know I have to spend marketing dollars. And yeah. I know the marketing dollar that I spend today won't entirely benefit me today. It will come back to me in a year from today.
Yeah.
And then what most people don't realize is, remember earlier we were talking about, well, how do you start and you build that list of your center of influence is what it's called. Well, in fact, if you read on Bigger Pockets, which is an outstanding website.
thank you.
Well, it is. And I don't know if the two of you have ever visited anybody else, any of the other arenas that are out there. But, I do every once in a while just to become so happy that I'm on Bigger Pockets. It's like, you look at, and I'm going to take this personally, I'm going like, I see my fiance and she's a beautiful female. But then when I go look at a like not so beautiful female, I'm really happy with my fiance.
So what you're trying to say is Bigger Pockets is a beautiful female.
Clearly.
Yeah. Clearly. as it compares to the other places that you both know are out there. But anyway.
Gotcha. Well, I wanted to kind of dig back on the 10% a little bit. Yeah. I think one of the things that I see and have seen over the years is you get these new guys and they think, they think that they can start doing deals with very little money, which they can do. And we've talked about ways that you can kind of do it. And then when they hear about the cost of marketing, they scoff and freak out. And, I experienced that as well when I was an agent, where new agents would come in, they say, well, I don't have the money to be an agent. How am I supposed to do this? And they don't want to do the legwork. They don't want to do the sweat equity stuff. And so they're stuck in this position where, well, how the heck are they going to get any business? And they, of course, are the, I don't know what the failure rate is on agents, but it's extremely high. At least I would guesstimate. And I think the same applies to investors as well for the same purpose. I think there's an unrealistic expectation of the amount of either sweat equity or cost that it takes to really start finding really, really great deals depending upon where you are, right? So if you're in an area, we talked about people in Milwaukee. Well, you can just look on the MLS and you're going to find great deals. But you're in Bakersfield, right, Michael? Yeah.
Right.
So, in Southern California, mid California, deals aren't falling off the MLS. You actually have to work to get those deals. And the work is either money or sweat. And so I always try and tell people you have to have a good expectation. And we'll have people who'll say, hey, I want to start today. And say, oh, cool. Well, how much money do you have? They're like, oh, I have nothing. I'm like, well, why don't you get a job? Start building up you could certainly go the creative route and that's a valid way to go, but why not get an actual job, start building up reserves so that you've at least got cash in the bank, whether it's for marketing, for flipping, for anything else, just to have something.
Right. I always, if I can go back to your statement of the attrition rate for real estate and agents, because it is large. You rarely see that second year or third year agent.
Right.
But once they become one, those are the successful ones. So if you can last 18, 24 months as a real estate agent, if you haven't fallen off because of lack of funds, then by that time you've learned what you didn't know.
Yeah.
So you can start learning what you don't know, what you've learned now, what you don't know.
Oh man, you're confusing us again.
But wouldn't it be nice for real estate investors if we had that same opportunity?
Yeah.
Where if we could go work for not the broker investor, but the guy or the gal and say, I want to learn this business. I just want to learn it. I just want to be around like-minded people. I want to learn. I want to learn what contracts are about. I want to learn, well, why you sit at the up desk or what do you say to somebody but we don't have that in our industry.
Right.
I mean, we have all the people that call themselves mentors and gurus and those kinds of things.
You're talking about real mentors. You're talking about actual mentors, not the salespeople who label themselves mentors. Yeah.
But that was a real advantage for me in the middle of my career when I did go get my real estate license and I sat at the desk and I watched the people filling up their coffee cups and hanging out at the donut box. And I was asking myself, why aren't these people going to work? But they were at work. That was the problem. They were at work, but they weren't going to work. And I learned real fast that, you know, in our life, all we have to do is have the drive to succeed. Watch people who are successful and do what they do. But most people watch someone who's successful and only want to do a part of what made them successful. So it's like, okay, well, I want to be a race car, but I don't want to put gas in my tank. Well, I can't. You're not going to succeed.
Yeah.
Right. And we have to kind of do everything that everybody that's succeeding is doing.
Well, and I think that's interesting what you talk about the real estate agents that were just kind of standing around and eating donuts and drinking coffee. And I see that, you know, in the real estate world as well, is, you know, they'll, I don't know, they spend hours on their website or on, I don't know, business cards or designing the perfect business card or designing the perfect whatever. It's like this idea of like, I feel like I'm being productive. I feel like I'm working. I feel like I'm making moves, but I'm really not. All I have to do is actually go out there and do some work. And I see that time and time again with people, especially brand new like wholesalers or house flippers. I see it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you hear about it. I mean, you hear about guys who'll say, hey, I want to get started and I want to work in Bakersfield. Well, what do you know about Bakersfield? I don't know anything about Bakersfield. Well, you know, what do you know about, you know, what area do you want to target? You know, where do you want to farm? I don't know. Well, get down, get out, get in your car, get on your bike, get on your rollerblades. I don't care. Just get out and get to know an area, and then you could start working on it and figuring it out, right? I mean, that's time.
It's easier than that. And, you know, when we buy houses out of town and we don't have legs on the ground out of town, but – you know, Google, you can drop down, you can see the house,
right?
Trulia, and then I have some other data sources that allow me to actually see a lot of history on the houses and see the houses that are on the market and what have you. Being a broker, being a member of the board, I can join a board in California for $1,000 kind of thing. So I can get all the information that I need, but what I can't get is that feel for value. So I can look at a CMA and I can say, this is the value of that house, but I haven't seen the house, except for the outside, but I don't have a feel for the street because I've never been to that street. So all I do is I just call a real estate agent, three of them, Prudential, Century 21, someone else kind of thing. And agents will actually go out and look at houses for me for free in hopes that I'll list the house with them once I buy it, which I would, and give me a complete write-up on the house. And they'll do all my work. And I love it. I wish there were real estate investors who were like real estate agents. I wish there was a place we could go as investors who seriously buy houses and say, okay, I have four people in Baltimore that I could call up and say, go look at this house for me.
Yep.
But we don't.
Well, two things. One, CMA, for those people who are listening and don't know, is comparative, I believe, comparative market analysis. And that basically will just kind of give you it's an analysis of the area around a property, essentially. And then to your point, I mean, that really is kind of what Bigger Pockets, one of the great things about Bigger Pockets, and I know tons and tons of people use it for that very purpose. Hey, I'm thinking about going to Milwaukee. I'm thinking about going to Miami. Well, who's there? Let me talk to them. And now I have boots on the ground because I've networked and used the platform to do that. So I think it's there, but to your point, I don't think there's, it's not necessarily formalized and it's kind of an organic thing more than anything else. And I think it would be awesome if there were more of a structure, which is, I think, what you're getting at, where investors are more willing to kind of take folks under their wings in a mentorship role. And maybe it was even formalized with, I don't know, I'm a certified investor mentor, something to that point.
Yeah, we were talking about direct mail marketing earlier. The cost of direct mail sometimes is larger than the ability to actually receive the leads and fulfill those leads. So just because someone can spend X amount of dollars doing it doesn't mean they actually can do it from lead capture and lead fulfillment.
Yeah.
But some of us don't have that issue all the way up to that lead fulfillment, because that's where the boots on the ground really comes in. It's, you know, tell me what the house is. Tell me what the social network in that is doing. And knowing that, we buy more houses. Those people that have a large marketing budget that would just plop themselves into any area, they would absolutely enter that area without a problem, because they know the mail is not an expense because of the rate of return that it has. and they buy more houses. And they put a lot of these new investors who are just looking for, how do I get started? What mentor do I go to? That's the best mentoring program they could have, is having someone who's marketing to their area, who doesn't know their area, and what you are is the gopher, which sounds horrible, but be the guy or the gal for me right there and tell me everything your eyes see. If I could put a camera on your forehead, that's what I'd want.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I agree with you completely.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, so you mentioned earlier about the 10% we talked about, that kind of, you can get a, you know, you spend spend $1,000 on marketing, you'll likely make $10,000. However, if I go and take $10,000 right now, or let's say I go to take 10 grand of my hard earned money and I go and buy 10,000, I don't know, pieces of paper that say I want to buy your house, and I stick them in the mail and I send them out to just like every door, direct mail or whatever, you know, the post office, or just go walk around my neighborhood and give it to every house, chances are I'm going to not make my money back. I'm probably, if I'm just sending it to everyone, right?
Well, we are still only about an 11% of our market. So in my city, I have 116,000 units. And by the way, if anybody's listening, know your numbers. I mean, it's real easy to learn in a city, how many houses do I have? How many of those are single family? Of those, how many have been owned for 4 years or longer? Of those, how many have 30% equity or greater? Of those, how many have 1 to 3 bedrooms?
How do we know those numbers? Like, how does somebody do that research?
The easiest way is create an account with ListSource, whether you buy it from them or not. Once you create an account, which is pretty easy, you can actually go in and play with the data. You can't see the actual result, like the address and the name, but they'll give you the counts. And you kind of have to start with your counts. How many things do I have to market to? Well, so if I have 116,000 units, but I only have 21,000 units that I should be marketing to, what's 21 and 116? What's that ratio? 1 in 6?
Probably.
No. Yeah, about 1 in 6.
Yeah, yeah.
What percentage is that? 17?
18, I think. What'd you say? What was your first number?
22,000. 1 in 6. So, right. So, well, I have 21,000 and 116.
Yep.
So that's about
18.9%.
So if I looked at all my houses, then I have 18% that could be a benefit to me, 82% that wouldn't be a benefit to me. So if I went into a neighborhood and just handed out flyers or did every door direct mail, 82% of it would be a waste of money, right?
Yep.
And so let's assume that a piece of mail cost $1. And so now if you sent out 100 of those, you have $82 that was a waste, and then you had $18 that wasn't a waste, but you really have $100 spent on 18 people.
Yeah.
That's an expensive letter. So that's what the beauty of direct mail is. In 2008, 2009, when RESPA came around again, and it's been around forever.
Explain RESPA really quick.
It's basically the governing body that controls title companies and how they give things away. So, like in the old days of a title company, they would buy you dinner, they would buy you stamps, they'd buy you stationery, they would buy you a car, they'd buy you anything that you'd ask them to buy you, as long as you were a productive agent and you could send them money. What they determined was, is because the seller and the buyer are the two people that are actually paying for the costs of escrow and title and all that kind of good stuff, RESPA came in and says, well, you can only give limited things to these people for free, because trying to entice them to do business with you, because it's not them that's actually paying the cost of what you're selling. And so when they did all that, and the CoreLogic merged with First American Title, and we started, instead of using MetroScan for our property searches, we now went to the CoreLogic platform. The CoreLogic platform, because now they could charge for it and not give it away, because if you gave it away, it wasn't a worthy platform to build. Now they're charging for it, so now we know when people have equity, and it changed the whole marketplace from a marketing perspective. Am I getting too deep on marketing?
Well, so you're saying that we can actually now tell how much equity somebody has. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And the algorithms that they use, and they don't let us know what the algorithm model is, but the algorithms are pretty good. And when we have a fast increase in appreciation or decline in value, we have to adjust on our end when we look at something and say, okay, 30 is really 40 or 40 is really 30, depending on what's happening. Like in the old days, I wouldn't go equity less than 40%, but now I'm comfortable with 30 because I know 30 is 40.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the algorithms haven't caught up yet.
And this is something through like ListSource, right? Is that CoreLogic or are those two different things?
ListSource and CoreLogic are the same thing.
Okay. All right. So people can go to ListSource and they can actually like look for people only that have equity.
Correct. So, and then we remove corps and trusts. Some people will still stick to trusts, thinking that trusts are owned by just mom and pops and not like-minded people. Yeah. I don't like trusts, but I don't market to trusts, but that doesn't mean other people don't. I'm not even sitting on the fence of whether I would do it or not, but I do understand why they would do it. I would never dissuade someone from doing it if that's truly what their marketing or what their model is. So we don't want to market to corps or LLCs.
Gotcha. Hey, Michael.
Yes.
So you're talking about marketing to folks who've got equity. That's kind of one target list, but there's other ways that people can go as well, right? I mean, we can target folks in probate, we can target divorce, yeah. We can target all yeah. these other things. So what do you find? Go ahead.
I think the question that's coming is what is the best prospect groups out there, right?
I wasn't going to go there. I was actually going to go there,
but
well, I mean, I was going to say. I think they all probably work, and I think it's just a matter of becoming an expert on any one or all of those different ways and see what you're best at, see what your marketing works best at in your area, I would assume. And you know, if you try your hand at probates and you stick with it for a while and you're not successful, try another one and another one. I mean, generally, at some point, you'll probably be successful, I would guess. But it would be interesting to hear what at least from your experience, the best bang for your buck is, and maybe you could tell us about that.
Well, being a guy, you know, I've mailed out to the inherited list. I've not marketed to the probate list. At one point, I was really big on the 30-60-90 mortgage late list.
Yeah,
a bucket load of foreclosures, naturally, equity
absentees.
Absentees. So there's absentees in general, and then there's absentees that are actually vacant. And then there's FSBOs with for sale by owners.
Right.
And then the expired list, people that had a listing with a real estate agent that expired, and now they're off the market for a moment. So I've marketed to all those. But what I've learned in the marketing is they all are under the list of equity. I will back up. The ones that I want are also on my equity list. So I always tell people who come to me and they say, well, what do you think about marketing to expireds? And I said, it's a great market to market to, but pull your equity list first. When you get your expired list, cross-check your expireds to your equity. If you have an expired that has equity, that's the one you want to market to. Because because they're an expired doesn't mean they're a prospect.
Yep.
They're just an expired. So if you market to all of your equity list, you're marketing to everybody else anyway. You don't have to say divorcee on the equity list because, well, you can be a divorcee, but you're also an equity owner, right?
That makes sense. So equity kind of covers everything. It's kind of a
it's the fruit bowl. It holds apples and oranges and all this, but it's still the fruit bowl. And so if you're serious about marketing, you market to that group. And for the longest time, you know, everybody preached absentee for a couple different reasons, and I get it. But I'm not preaching absentee at all anymore. I think it's equally as good as an owner-occupied equity. So it's the mom and pop that has a house they want to sell to go move someplace else.
Yep.
You know, for a while we were marketing owner-occupieds where someone on the deed was 65 years or older and they lived in the house for 15 years or longer. And we put those filters on it so that when that person wanted to sell, if they've been there for 15 years or longer, there's some deferred maintenance. So it's probably falling down. It was probably a family home and now there's no family at home. So they don't need the four bedrooms that they had because there's just two of them now. They're 65 or older, and this, you know, 2,500 square feet rundown home or home that hadn't been maintained is now ready to be sold. And then the other kicker is they typically don't need the money because their residence wasn't looked at as retirement income. Most people don't look at their personal residence as a thing they're going to retire with. And so there were deals to be made there. That said, if there's an investor that wants to do that, don't go out there and do that, you know, like 100%, you know, right out of the gate. Find out if you can actually communicate with that prospect group, because it's one of the hardest prospect groups from an emotion standpoint to communicate with. And so, but if you get along with them and you understand them, and you want to help them, then absolutely do it.
Okay. So you're saying, just so I can clarify there, like, we can market to anybody that has the equity, obviously. But if we want to, you know, I don't know what the word is, pare that down, I guess, into a group that you feel most comfortable dealing with. Right. Is that what you would advise then?
Right. If someone wants to go out, like your probate list doesn't, you know, your probate list doesn't mean they even have real property. So yeah, the first thing you have to do on that is determine, in okay, is it real property probate or just a probate transaction? Well, if there's real property attached to it, the next thing I would look at, okay, is it at property on my equity list? Because if it's not on my equity list, there's absolutely no reason to go after that probate.
Yep.
Yep.
Because they still have, just because someone dies doesn't mean the loans go away.
Yep. Yep.
So, yes. I mean,
I like thinking of it in that way. I never really thought of it because I do not, like, personally, I don't like dealing with certain types of people, with certain types of sellers. It bothers me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe probate's one of them. I mean, I haven't done a lot with probate, but when people call me, like, I don't know. I just don't feel like that comfortable doing it because it's not my personality to be there. So I like that way of thinking of find the people that you enjoy working with, right, and then work. Like, I enjoy working with out of town or absentee landlords. I like that because I'm a landlord. I can identify with them. I can work with them, help them. I understand the numbers really well. And that's just what I do. And other people are really good at dealing with probate. I know people like Sharon Vornholt, that's her bread and butter, because she's good at
like
that.
Sharon and Rick. I mean, if I were going to get into probate, I would absolutely be bugging the crap out of those two people.
Yep.
Because they have so much knowledge that they haven't even written down yet. I mean, and I don't think they're trying to hide it from us. It's just, you know, probate's not that big push. You don't see that big conversation about buying probates like you do on some of the other things, because it's not a preached prospect group by a lot of the gurus on their weekend shows.
Yeah.
So people are always going after, you know, absentee owners, which is really getting overused. So pick a group. Make sure if you pick the group that the group also has equity, because which is the problem with bandit signs, but one of the problems besides
amongst
being
others. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I have bought houses because of bandit signs, but I've never put one up. And so if anybody wants to, here's a little trick. If you don't want to put bandit signs up, but want to buy houses from bandit signs, put their phone number in the phone book or under 411 Google of I buy houses and we buy houses. So get two phone numbers, pay for the little white page ad and say, I buy houses and I am we buy houses. So, cause what happens is people pass these signs and they all say, we buy houses, I buy houses. Every one of the signs say, we buy houses, I buy houses. With a phone number, they drive so fast and it's, that thing is embedded in their brain. Now they decide, I want to sell my house. They go back, someone's taken the sign down or the city's cut the sign in half. They can't read the phone number, so they call information for the I buy houses phone number or the we buy houses phone number, and there your phone number sits. So what is it going to cost you? $25? It's like nothing, but you're going to get free leads because someone else put bandit signs up.
That's interesting. It's kind of I never thought about the 401. I mean, people do the same thing with online marketing, right? Like people go, they see the sign for we buy houses or I buy houses or whatever, and they go online, they type in I buy houses, you know, San Francisco. And people try to get their website to rank for that because that's what people type in because they see the sign. So again, you're piggybacking off of what other people have done. To make that work. And you know, the same thing applies for like, I do a lot of, not a lot, but I do a little bit of Facebook advertising. And Facebook advertising is kind of like bandit signs in that I'm advertising to everyone. I can't pick equity when I'm doing Facebook ads. So I get a lot of phone calls of people. Like the other day I talked to a lady who owed $142,000 on her house. And I went and looked at it and the thing's maybe worth $90,000. And like I looked at it and I'm like, there's nothing I can do for you. I mean, maybe I could try to work a short sale, but it was a two bedroom house. I can't even do anything with a two bedroom house. So in that area. So anyway, I mean, I like that idea about direct mail, being able to get a list, like you talked about, a list that has equity that applies to the kind of person that you're interested in dealing with, and then you market to them. So that's how we get the list. So then how do we, I mean, what are we sending to these people? We got yellow letters, white letters. I mean, what are our options?
Well, there are pretty much five options when you look at direct mail.
Okay.
So we have the yellow letter, which can be, and for people that don't know what the yellow letter is, it traditionally is it appears to be a yellow tablet lined paper that someone wrote on that says, I want to buy this house, call this phone number. It appears as though you've pulled it out of the yellow pad tablet, folded in fours, and put it in an invitation envelope with a handwritten address on the front and a return address on the back, typically tucked into the back flap so you don't lick the envelope and seal it. Stamp on it and send it in its mail. What it appears to the person receiving it is coming from like grandma or Aunt Jane or someone that they know because it's in an invitation envelope. It's cute. It's friendly. And it is going to piss the people off sometimes. But it's what it does. I mean, and that is actually the power of the letter, because although it's pissing some people off, it's making some people happy.
Yeah.
So you have both emotions at play. And so the yellow letter is a great thing to send out. I would always send it out in any marketing campaign I was going to do. And then there are zip letters where if you've ever gotten a traffic ticket or a corporate check coming from a large company, it'll be inside of this perforated envelope that you have to tear open, and then the check's at the bottom kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or the summons is at the bottom, or the traffic ticket's at the bottom. Those get open. They're great because it looks like it's important enough to get open, and then you can tell the story. And then you have the postcard, and the postcards in our industry, where most industries, like realtor industries, they'll do a lot of pictorial postcards. They'll put their picture on it, and you know they'll put some industry statistics on it, and then they're going to put some sort of other picture on it. So we call those pictorials. And then you have text postcards, which is really geared to what we do in life from an investor strategy, that where we can talk to the prospect. And strangely enough, the market for text postcards, and a text postcard is literally just written format. It's just on a yellow piece of paper, and sometimes they're on white, sometimes they're on blue, sometimes they're on pink, sometimes on green, sometimes on orange, mostly on yellow. And the reason for the yellow, and the reason that the text postcard came about, is it appears to be like a notice from the post office. You know, like you have a package or something. Those are all your little yellow postcard kinds of things. And so those get noticed, because the worst thing about a small postcard is they're 4 by 5.5, which is a lot smaller than a lot of other things that's coming in the mail. And so we're playing off the color as a color associates to something that's important, being a post office notice.
Yep.
But what's strange about the postcards right now that's happening is the industry has a tendency to move sideways and up and down quite a bit. And we're seeing a lot of no phone number postcards. So
somebody's sending a postcard with no...
I'll remove that statement. We're seeing a lot of postcards with phone numbers that are intentionally not being answered. And the messages on the postcards is, I'm not going to talk to you. When you call this number, no one will talk to you. And the people that are sending them out are getting really great results on it. And it's a phenomenon. It's hard for me to understand and wrap my brain around. However, I try to wrap my brain around anything that's working. So there's a reason, by the way, it works, is because we're building such energy into this mystical thing that's going to happen when you call this phone number, because we're telling them, call this phone number. You have a recorded message about your home.
Okay. Yeah.
We're not even saying on the postcard, we want to buy your house, which is what most postcards say. We're just saying we have an important message about your house. Please call. And then they filter out through the voicemail of this long voicemail of why you know they wanted you to call them. And then what drops out of that is an opportunity. But what stays in that funnel is the ways of contacting all those people, because all those people were on your prospect list, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So now you might have a bucketload of something else that you can market to. I don't know.
So you're saying like people call that to get the recorded number, and then now we have their phone number and you can follow up with them. Is that what you mean?
Correct. And then some marketer taking that phone number and then doing some SMS stuff and hitting them. You know, where if a postcard costs 36 cents, a text message costs probably a tenth of a penny kind of thing. And you can set those up on autoresponders and what have you. I'm not so certain our industry is completely there yet. However, they are using a cell phone when they call, so they probably understand text messaging. Yeah. And then the fifth piece of mail is a professional letter, which typically has logos on it. It's that normal looking, not invoice looking, but normal looking letter from an attorney kind of thing or someone important. And those have their place for certain prospects. Like if I was going to do probate marketing, and it's one of the stages in my short sale marketing that I would do. But they don't have their place in all prospect groups. Like I wouldn't necessarily send one as my first line of marketing to an equity list. It would be one of my later pieces. And I'm a firm believer that we should be mixing up our messages to all the prospect groups.
I was just going to ask you that. Should we be sending because I'm assuming if one of these worked industry standard for everyone, then we wouldn't have five, we'd have one. But because there's five, different ones work for different people at different times. So you're suggesting to send a variety?
Yeah, it's bigger than that. There was a question post on Bigger Pockets, that outstanding website we go to. I love it. It's like I called it my mistress the other day. And well, it kind of is. It's like if you think about it, it's you can go have fun with this thing and you don't feel guilty. You know?
And that's our new marketing line.
That is it right there. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Awesome.
So
anyway, there was a thing on Bigger Pockets.
There was a and someone, you know, they were talking about branding and just sending out the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And I looked at the other side of the fence. Coca-Cola has 112 things you can drink. So they have 112 items that you can drink. So does Coke really need Tab? It's one of the things they sell. Yep. But they have Diet Coke. Do they really need seven different waters? It's water. No, but it's water, right?
Yep.
Why do they need them? Well, it's real easy. They want the largest market share they can get because they know some people love Tab. As bad as Tab is, they love it. And some people love Diet Coke. And some people will like the square bottled water. And some people will like the blue round bottled water. And it's just water.
Yep.
And they know, wow, if we want to talk to all of the people out there, what do? Well, we send them a yellow letter, we send them a zip letter, we send them a postcard, we send them a different type of postcard, and we send them a professional letter. And now we have the opportunity to speaking to all of the different personality types that are out there. Because if we only marketed with the one thing that works, the yellow letter that works, to say, let's assume that works the best for your prospect group. If that's, but what's best? 7%? 8%? Well, what about the 93% that didn't like it?
Yeah.
Well, why don't we also market to the 93% that didn't like it?
Yeah.
And so we figure out, okay, what's the next chunk? Well, the next chunk's a text postcard. So let's get that one. And then let's get – and sure, we can't market to everybody because some of the people just don't like anything.
Right.
They're just not going to drink Coke and stuff.
Hey, Michael. So we covered the five types, and that makes a ton of sense.
Whenever I used to travel, I would get that creeping feeling that I locked my back door. How do I know my property is going to be safe while I'm away? But not anymore, thanks to SimpliSafe Home Security. I'm about to go on a 3-week trip to Copenhagen, but am I tripping about my trip? Nope. With award-winning security and peace of mind from SimpliSafe, I don't need to worry. SimpliSafe is a super amazing alarm system that I actually installed in my house myself personally in less than 30 minutes. And there's so much peace of mind knowing that there's something in place to protect my homes, my goods, and my John Mayer shrine. SimpliSafe systems have high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods, indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch night and day, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. Plus, SimpliSafe professional monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera. Hey, bud, get out of here. It's like that, but it's a lot better, I imagine. And if you buy the system and you don't love it, you can get a full refund with SimpliSafe's 60-day money-back guarantee. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off of any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. Calling all property owners and operators. Are you managing a multifamily property and looking to elevate your residents' living experience? Introducing Quantum Fiber Internet, your go-to choice for speedy internet your residents will love. The process is as seamless as Quantum Fiber service. Starting at just $50 a month, your residents can enjoy fast, reliable internet that will make them love where they live even more. Connect with your local fiber representative today. Learn more at q.com/gobig. I wonder how they got that domain. That's q.com/gobig. Limited availability. Service and rate in select locations only. Taxes and fees apply. 360 Wi-Fi and other equipment lease charges, taxes, and fees are excluded from price for life offer and may be increased. Take a second and imagine this. Immediate cash flow, above average rent, built-in equity, and a foolproof exit plan. No, it's not 2012 again. This is just what it's like to invest with Integra Development Group. They've simplified the real estate investing process so everyone can invest. With their new construction single-family rent-to-own homes, you'll get aggressively priced, brand-new properties that have tenants in place now in one of the fastest-growing states in America, Florida. Here's how IDG's rent-to-own strategy works. You get exclusive access to inventory with aggressive pricing thanks to IDG's builder-partner relationships. Then, invest and collect immediate cash flow with tenants already in place at or very close to closing. With the demand for new builds, your tenants pay above market rent, so you rake in more cash flow. And you'll get built-in equity and appreciation with an already agreed-to purchase price at year three, helping the tenants become homeowners while you build wealth. That's investing simplified. So secure your next investment property today with Integra Development Group at IntegraDG.com. That's IntegraDG.com to start investing today.
What are we saying? Obviously, I'm assuming we're going to switch that up depending on where they are in our funnel. Is this our first or fifth letter to them? But in general, what are we kind of saying? And I know you had kind of talked about that pre-recorded postcard, but what about the other stuff? And I know that's very generalized because you're going to be very specific depending upon the type of marketing that you're doing. But in essence, what are we asking these guys? What are we telling to these people?
And I've only done millions and millions of pieces of direct mail, so I only know what I know. Okay.
What are you trying to say? You know more than us?
No, but I only know this answer from the perspective of doing millions and millions and millions of pieces of mail.
Right.
I don't know it from the perspective of doing 1,000 pieces of mail.
Right.
So my experience tells me, irrespective of the prospect group, you mail the same thing, the same message. Because our message is, I want to buy your house. Now, in a yellow letter, we keep it very simple, very to the point, very directed. We don't brag about our corporate or LLC statuses. We don't brag about that we're going to buy it in a trust. We don't tell them how we're going to buy it. We don't talk about sub two or lease options, any of those things. We say, I want to buy your house at this address, call this phone number. We can get a little bit more creative and add that I'm an investor looking to buy a house in your market, or my wife and I are looking to buy another rental in your market. But what we don't want to do on the yellow letter is make it so long that it loses the prospect in the first or second paragraph. Because handwritten fonts or live handwriting, if you took someone's handwriting that wrote, that's about a 21 font size. Well, we type it at 10 to 12 font size, so we can only say about half of what we could say, so it has to be pretty short, or we just run off the paper.
That makes sense. Speaking of fonts, you mentioned font handwriting. Is that what people do? How does that work versus handwriting versus typing a font?
In the old days, we would take a piece of white paper, we would handwrite the letter, leave a space for the address, because I think the address, adding the address in the letter is more important than the name of the person in the letter. So I can say, hello, neighbor. I want to buy your house at 123 Apple Street. And the 123 Apple Street's better than Dear John.
Okay.
but if I can do both, I want to do both. And then, so we'd write this letter out and whatever kind of pen we wanted to use. And we'd make a copy of it. We'd then copy it on lined paper. And then someone would come back that wrote the letter and they'd write in the John and the 123 Apple Street. And it would truly look like it was entirely handwritten. And then I think it was Apple that came along with all of their fonting ability and what have you, and created some great things. And now we have the ability to create our own fonts. And from our perspective, we've created 8 or 9 of them. And so we can really take now someone's handwriting and make the letter look really handwritten, but it's all fonted. Then we have the opportunity to say, okay, do we want a font address on the envelope or a handwritten address on the envelope? And I've done some tracking and determination and, okay, is it worth spending the extra money to have someone handwrite something or just font it all out? And it is not worth writing something on the envelope over just fonting it all out. Yes, you're going to get a better open rate, but are you not going to get a better close rate based upon the expense? So if I could, if let's call it a quarter to have someone write an envelope out, if I could take that on 1,000 letters, that $250 I would have saved and put more marketing out on the street, I now have more opportunity on the street to buy more houses. Because what we're doing is when we buy a house, our cab costs are so large, which makes our profit so large, that it far exceeds the cost of going that other route. So when you run the numbers like that, it makes sense. I'm not sure if that was your question or not. But
that's all right.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's fine.
I just want to know more, dive more on the font thing. But yeah, we have probably like, 10 more questions, like specifically on direct mail that we want to fire at you real quick. Because these are really good questions that I want to get to, but we're never going to have time. So I'm going to fire these at you and let's do these ones like in fire round sequence sort of thing.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Ready? Here's the first one.
All right. What are the top mistakes people make with direct mail?
Not answering their phone or having an answering system set up.
Okay. I like it.
And then the right next to that one is not being prepared for either the lack of calls or the abundance of calls. Because a lot of people, because they just want to do something, they want to be busy,
but
they don't look at the end perspective, what the end goal, what's it going to produce? When you send out 14,000 letters, are you prepared for all of these calls?
Yep.
No.
Yeah.
Or if you only send out 50 letters, are you prepared for that?
One. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think that's great.
It definitely makes sense. And I think I think it's great. I mean, that this stuff is gold right here. All right. How many times should you repeat a direct mail sequence before you see results? And to kind of clarify that a little bit, I wonder if you could tell us through your data and your experience, for a deal, for the average person who's closing deals, is it the first piece of mail that results in a closed deal? Is it the third, the fifth, the seventh? Or is that just really going to vary so much?
It varies a lot because what happens with direct mail is if an investor starts marketing into an area that's being marketed already, then their first letter isn't the prospect's first letter.
Yeah.
And so they're piggybacking on someone else's marketing, which is great. So we see a lot of, in a bigger, larger area, we see a lot of benefit to someone who can jump in and start doing transactions on their first and second mail piece. But if someone's in a small area where they don't have their peer group marketing with them, then they're going to be, you know, that 2 to 8 sequence kind of thing. And there was a day I was sending out 16 letters within a 30-day period. I would get to an average of 9 before I could pull them off my mail piece, my mailing sequence, because we did something with them. So
wait, so you're saying you did 16 pieces in 30 days? Like you mailed them like every other day?
We wouldn't do that today, but you know, that's been part of my history.
Wow.
Today I'm mailing. I call it my 17 cycle. If I have an address, and this is important for people to understand, you have an address. So how long should you market to that address? You market to that address until they sell to somebody else, or they no longer qualify to be on your list, and you determine if they're still qualified on your list every 6 months. So you pull your list in January 1st, and then July 1st, you repull your list. But in the meantime, during that 6 month period, you've sent them 8.5 pieces of mail. And over the next 12 months, if they're still on your list, you're going to send another 8.5 pieces of mail. So you're going to be a 17 schedule on your marketing. So every 3 weeks. It used to be, before we had this influx of appreciation or selling, about a 6 week cycle, but now it's a 3 week cycle. We should be taking, when we should be moving, when our market's moving. So as the market gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and it is, we should be marketing more often. And then as it cools back down again, going backwards, we should never go over 90 days a product. And some people look at their marketing budget. You know, someone, one of you asked earlier, $10,000, what would they do with it? Well, that's, you, when you look at a marketing budget, you look at a 90-day period of time. What can you do over the 90-day period of time? So if you have $1,000, you really only have $333 a month to market with. And then you have to be satisfied. Then you have to be satisfied that month one, that could produce you 10 times that amount. Month two, it could produce you 20 times that amount. Or month three, it could produce you 30 times that amount, where you wouldn't have gotten anything the previous month. So we should always look at that, but then keep going. So it's not like you do three pieces of mail and stop. You keep going and going and going and going and going. And then every 6 months, you repull your list.
And if they're still on the list, then you hit them again.
Yeah.
Because some will have sold to somebody else, which is why we redo the list.
Yeah.
There's at that rate, because in most markets right now, they're turning inventory about 25%. And the lists are expensive. The mail pieces are expensive. The mail pieces start being more expensive than the list towards that 6 months. So you just get a new one.
That makes sense. So what would you, I guess, suggest for people? Because we talked about piggybacking off other folks who might already be marketing. How would people stand out against their competitors in those areas? You know, I mean, what if I'm in the same area as you are, and I'm following, you know, I listen to you and I'm like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. And now I start doing it. I mean, is it just luck of the draw? Is it the message? Is it timing? Is it all the above?
I think there is luck even when you're skilled and you have systems in place.
Sure.
Because we don't know who the prospect is. If we did, we'd only send out that letter. Or the motivated prospect. But it starts with, let's say we have lead generation. So that's doing something that puts a lot of something somewhere for calls to come in. But right at that point, it's how are we going to capture it? Because that's where a ton of people fall down. It's like, so the call comes in and they're at work, or they're doing something else, and they're doing something else. And then finally they call them back and I'm sitting at the kitchen table buying the house.
Yeah.
It's like,
and that's because you're answering the phone, and the vast majority of other people you're saying are not answering their phones.
Yeah. And you can prove this to yourself. If you're in a marketplace, look on Craigslist or look in the newspaper for people that say, I want to buy your house, and call it.
Them. Call them.
I've done that a few times just because I think it would be funny to like call somebody and just like, yeah, like I want to see how they handle the call. So I do it from time to time. I call bandit signs or I'll call ads. I've never had anybody answer ever. It's always going to voicemail.
There's been times, you know, I've sat at the kitchen table, to get the contract signed, and they, you know, they say, well, so and so was here yesterday, and he gave us a better price. It beckons the call. So and so was here yesterday, and he gave you a better price.
Then why am I here?
No, I ask him, well, why didn't you buy it from them?
Right.
What was it about them that you felt that they couldn't fall forward?
Yeah, there was an article I read online the other day that said people, it was like a sales article on entrepreneur.com or something like that. And it was about, it said people don't buy what you, like what you're selling. They usually buy because of who you are a lot more than, and I thought that was interesting.
Well, which is, you know, it goes back to the first podcast where we were getting into how do you actually communicate with people. And some people took offense to that, which I was kind of surprised, but I guess that's normal. but at the same time, it's so valuable. I mean, how you really need to learn how to speak to people and what questions to ask, and then ask the questions and be prepared to buy a house. And most people aren't.
Yep. I agree. I think that's
I think that's awesome. Josh, did that answer your question?
It totally did. It totally did. And listen, everything that we've dealt with, everything we've covered in this show so far, it's been fantastic. And, you know, truth be told, Brandon and I are sitting here on the shared doc that we've got all our notes on, and we keep crossing things off the list. So even though you're not specifically answering them as we ask them, you're actually answering them as you talk. So it's awesome.
All right. So we talked about voicemail a little bit earlier, and you should try to answer your phone as much as possible, you're saying. However, you can't always, like you said, this is a job. This is a business. You don't work 24/7, 365.
You can't answer your phone even if it isn't a job 24/7.
Yep.
So you always have to have the backup plan in play. And sometimes the backup plan in play is answering your phone. And that's a weird statement to make. Because if you can't answer all the calls all the time, shouldn't you set a system up that the majority of the calls that you can't answer are the primary calls, and the ones you can answer are the other calls? Because if you can give everybody the same experience, then you have duplicatable results.
I think he's talking about having, you know, if you can't answer it, well, at 6 o'clock, maybe having a service that answers it.
Either a service, a voicemail, a system in play that answers the phone for you and carries out a series of tasks that you've set up in advance. And those tasks feed you something that you've set up so that you can fall forward. But even if you answer all your calls during the day, let's assume that's the case. You can't answer all your calls during the day. You're going to be at lunch. You're going to be sleeping, you're going to be doing something, or you're going to be on the phone talking to a seller anyway. So if you're going to send everybody else to a voicemail, then I think it's extremely important to set up that voicemail or that call service answering service system and make that as good as it can be, and then answer the calls that you want to answer.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I was going to say, well, what does that mean? So are you talking about finding a way to actually filter the calls somehow before you, I mean, I'm imagining, which would be amazing, that there's some system that would actually, you could pre-program in all the phone numbers of the people that you somehow managed to get from the same list that you got from list source, say. And now when that call comes in, you know, it's distressed seller A that's got X amount of equity, and then it flashes and you're like, oh, well, this call, he barely had equity. I'll let it go to voicemail. I mean, it'd be amazing if that were possible.
Yeah. It would be amazing if that were possible.
Yeah.
That's not. I'm saying is most people don't spend enough time with their call capture system.
Okay.
And as equal amount of time that it takes to set up that marketing program, you should set up your call capture system.
Gotcha.
Because you can't market. I mean, you can't talk to everybody at the same time. And if you can't, then what's the best experience you can give them? And I think it really just depends on what your budget is. You can go to Pat Live or a company like that and have them answer. They absolutely have their negatives. You can go to a voicemail and either do, you know, a really sweet, innocent, fast voicemail, which has its negatives. You can do a long, drawn out, why I want to buy your house voicemail, which has its negatives. Everything has a positive, but, you know, there's good and bad things with everything. You can live answer it as much as you can. You can, whatever you need to do. I choose in my business, because I think buying houses where you make 50 grand is pretty good, that I choose to have staff members who sit there and they're paid to sit there between 8 and 5 and answer my phone. And they're running off of scripts. They're doing the work that needs to be done with the call that comes in. And then at that point, we can take it from there and actually go and find out if we have an opportunity. But I also know they're going to miss calls. So the calls that they miss, they go to a voicemail system that has a short message that the person can leave, comes right back to those attendants, and they're told to call those people back within 15 minutes of that call coming in, because we know that person's fresh.
Yep.
And then following up and set an appointment. So assuming they answer the 5 questions right. So, and then on weekends, everything goes to voicemail because we don't work weekends. And I know some investors, that's the only time that they can work. So if that's the time that they can work, then they work weekends. I've always wanted an investment business that wasn't a slave to my business. And that kind of seems like slave business.
Hey, Michael. So
it's great.
Good information. We're wrapping this thing up. We really have one last question for you, and I think a lot of people can relate to this particular one. And I think this explains why a lot of people don't answer their phones.
Okay.
What would you suggest for a newbie who's trying to overcome the fear of answering their phone, how to actually go ahead and do it? You know, that first phone call is petrifying for a lot of people. And so what advice do you have for the newbies who are listening about, you know, how to prepare for that call maybe, or what to say, or what to have at the ready for that first phone call?
I've always said that you should have a script, and you should have the scripts on you, whatever script you want to use. And we use a short one, we use a long one. And over my years of doing this, we have three or four different scripts. But learn it. And how do you learn it? I think you memorize it, saying it really fast 10 times in the morning to yourself, and then 10 times at night to yourself. You'll learn it. You try to memorize it, but it still needs to be your voice, your tonality, your way of speaking. Because you need to be able to ask questions without looking at something. And that fear is a great thing. We either have fear of being successful, or we have fear of not being successful. So you have to ask yourself, what am I afraid of? Am I afraid that I'm not going to be successful, or am I afraid of being successful? And if it's so you play on that and you go, okay, it's not – okay, my fear is just fear because – I don't know how to do something, but I want to be rich. Well, get over it and just, you know, answer the phone, go practice, find something to practice with, you know, call strangers, go call, you know, 312-555-1212 and ask someone to, you know, if they had a house for sale. And, you know, they're going to say all kinds of things to you and hang up on you and call you your idiot and all these words and then pick up the phone and do it again.
Yeah.
You know, practice on people who don't matter to you, so that when calls that you've spent money on come in that do matter to you, then you can talk to them.
It's great advice.
These people have spent so much energy, mind energy, money energy, time energy, to get to where they are at, and man, not being prepared is crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think that's a great way to end this thing. That's great. Yeah.
All right, Mike. Well, listen, we really, 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 really appreciate the time. We're going to skip the fire round. We're going to skip the famous four. We've done those, and we've done them within the last like month, so I don't really see any point. But this has been fantastic. We've covered a ton of content, a ton of material, and we really, really appreciate you giving us the time. We also obviously appreciate you spending time with your mistress, that is Bigger Pockets, of course. And anybody listening who has questions about marketing, direct marketing, Michael's always amazing. He's always one of the guys who'll jump in and help out. So, you know, feel free to do that, guys, on the forums or obviously on the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show81. Last thing, Michael, before we kick you out of here, where can people find more about you? And you do have a company that does this stuff, that does marketing. So feel free to give a quick little plug here.
You know, we didn't cover marketing hardly at all. And shame on me for getting so long-winded, because I'm passionate about it. So if anybody wants to really learn about marketing, all they got to do is call me. I told everybody last time to call Norma, and she now has a dartboard and a picture of me on the wall. And darts. And so I have holes in my face from Norma throwing darts at me. So call the office, ask for me. They'll probably set you up a time to call, to actually talk with me. You know, I'll spend an hour and a half, 2 hours. I will absolutely set up a marketing program for you that you can fall forward with. And I'll absolutely be honest with them. If I don't think they should do direct mail, I will tell them don't do direct mail. Or if they shouldn't do yellow letters and do a postcard. Because I'm not in it for my success. I'm already successful. I'm in it for their success.
Yeah.
And cool. Let's make them successful. So just call yellowletters.com, and that I wasn't supposed to say. And or maybe I was.
Well, no, you can say it now. We just, you know, we don't want the show to be a big old
yellowletters.com.
There you go. Check it out, guys. Yellowletters.com. Michael, thanks so much for your time. And we'll see you around on the site.
See you around on the site.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Guys. All right, guys. That was show 81 of the Bigger Pockets podcast with Michael Quarles. I'm sure you guys noticed there was not a famous four, and we specifically did that because we'd already done it just a few weeks earlier. And we didn't see the value of regurgitating said information to you. Otherwise, that was great, Brandon. I mean, I was certainly impressed with the amount of information that Michael had to share. And as I always am, he's fantastic on the forums.
Yeah. Yeah. What I like about Michael a lot is that he goes deeper than just the how to, right? It's not just do this, send this letter. Here's why you send it. Like, Michael always goes deeper into like, what does it actually mean? Because a lot of times just telling people you need to send this XYZ out doesn't always work. Yeah. Everybody's got a different scenario. So I love that he kind of shares the background of why we do things and how to do them, starting from nothing. So great.
Yeah. Yeah. And, great. And, you know, obviously we were kidding about it, but you know, some of the answers tended to be verbose, but I think that's because he's been around for so long and has so much knowledge. And in fact,
you calling him old?
Yep. Now that he's not here, I'm calling him old. What do you say about that, Michael? No, he's been around and he knows what he's doing. And yeah, it was great. So anyway, big thanks to Michael. If you are a Bigger Pockets member, obviously you know that you can connect and interact with Michael on the forums. He's on there pretty much every day. As he called it, Bigger Pockets is his mistress. And you can find tons of other amazing, amazing, brilliant people hanging out on Bigger Pockets, their mistresses as well, sharing lots of great information. And for those of you who are not, that's why you need to be doing it. These guys, these folk are really, really good people. And if you're not on there engaging, asking them questions, picking their brains, you're missing a lot of the fun and you're missing a lot of the value of this site. So definitely encourage you to do that. You know, it kind of breaks my heart sometimes. You'll see guys who jump on the site and they'll participate for like a couple days and then you never hear from them again. And then, you know, you'll find out 3, 4, 5 months later that they quit the business. And yeah, you'll ask them, hey, what happened? Well, I just, you know, I didn't have the support. I didn't have this. And you stop and you say, well, you have this monster support group. You have all these people who can mentor you and help you and be there to guide you. You know, if you're sitting there silently, you're not getting that. So here's my reminder to anyone listening who's either not signed up yet for Bigger Pockets or who's on Bigger Pockets and hasn't really stepped it up and started to connect with people. You got to do it because you're going to find so much value. You're going to find so many great people to help you and help you grow your business. So I definitely encourage that. Sorry to go on and on, but I'm really passionate about this. And it's so exciting watching people's businesses grow because of their participation on our platform. With that, as always, like to remind you, we've got our Facebook, our Twitter, our G+, our LinkedIn. Definitely jump in, follow us there. We share all sorts of cool stuff and content and news and, you know, other fun things. And hopefully you'll participate with us there. And beyond that, that's it. This is show 81 of the Bigger Pockets podcast with Michael Quarles. The show notes you can find at biggerpockets.com/show81. And I'm going to let my friend Brandon take us out of here.
Once again, Bigger Pockets podcast, show 81 in the books. This is Brandon and Josh signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.